Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized, verses 1 through 10. I'm going to chant the Sanskrit for these 10 verses, then read the translations for these 10 verses, and then read the purports to these 10 verses. This is a particular section which I have entitled How Arjuna Surrenders. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, Sanjaya Uvacha Tang Tata Kripaya Vishtam Ashrupurna Kulikshanam Vishidantam Idang Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudana. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kutastva Kashmalam Idam Vishame Samupasthitam Anarya Jushtam Asparyam Akirti Karam Arjuna Klavyang Masmagam Parata Naitatva Yupapadyate Shudrang Hridaya Daurbalyang Twakvotishta Parandhava. Arjuna Uvacha Katang Bhishmam Mahang Sanke Dronang cha Madhusudana Ishubi Pratiyotsyami Pujarhav Arisudana Guru Nahatvahi Mahanuvavan Srayo Bhoktung Baiksham Apihaloke Hatvarta Kamangs to Gurun Ihaiva Bunjiya Bhogan Rudira Pradigdhan Nachaitad Vidma Kataran Nogariyo Yadva Jayema Yadivano Jayeyu Yaneva Hatvana Jiji Vishamas Devastita Pramuke Dartarastra Karapanya Dosho Bhattasvava Prichyami Tang Dharma Samudhacheta Yat Shreyasya Nishchitang Bruhitan me Shishyaste Hang Shadimang Twang Prapanang Nahi Prapashyami Mama Panudyad Yachchokam Uchchoshanam Indriyanam Avapya Bhuma Vasapatnam Ridham Rajang Suranam Apijadipatyam Sanjaya Uvacha Evam Ukva Rishikeshang Gudakesha Parantapa Nayotsya Iti Govindam Ukdva Tushning Babuvaha Tam Uvacha Rishikesha Prahasan Iva Bharata Senayor Ubayor Madye Vashidantang Idang Vachaha. So before we do the translations, we will chant the introductory shlokas that are found on page 1. Om Ajnana Chimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mili Tangyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtang Stapitang Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayang Dadati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutta Ada Kamalang Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha. Come sit here and get on the shelf. There is the Bhagavad Gita. What is your name? Chris? All right, come with your seat and sit right here. I'll do the whole class for your benefit. All right? All right. So we're on page one, so you can follow along. Sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam Krishna Chaitanya. Right there. Okay. So you see the big prayer at the bottom? All right. We're on the last line. Shri Radha Krishna Padan. You see that? Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvi Tangscha. Next page. He Krishna. Right? Karana Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpati Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gurangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Brishabanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. You find it now? We're together? No? Okay, do you find Vanchakalpa? You see it? Okay, good. All right. Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Correct? Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now you sing. Go louder. Very good. Good. Very good. So how long you've been chanting on your beads? For a month. You like it? Good. Very good. Okay, so now turn to chapter 2. And we're going to do the translations for the first 10 verses, because this section is called How Arjuna Surrenders. So let me know when you're on chapter 2, verse 1. Let me know when you're ready. We have more books over there on the shelf if you want to follow along. Okay, very good. So you got chapter 2, verse 1? Okay, very good. So how much of Bhagavad Gita do you know? Okay. So before we go to this chapter 2, I will give a review of chapter 1. Fair enough? So in chapter 1, the main events is Dhritarashtra, who is blind, is situated in a particular camp, and he is asking his secretary, Sanjay, what is happening in a distant place called the Kurukshetra, which was supposed to be the scene of a fratricidal war between two families, the Kauravas, that's Dhritarashtra's sons, and the Pandavas. So Dhritarashtra's secretary is a mystic yogi, and by meditation, he's able to see in a distant place what is happening. So Dhritarashtra opens Bhagavad Gita by asking Sanjaya, so what's happening? Because this Bhagavad Gita was spoken on the first day of the war. The war lasted for 18 days. The war was fought to determine who would rule the world. The winner takes all. So, the hero, Arjuna, in chapter 1, he requests his chariot driver, Krishna, to take his chariot in the middle of both the armies so that Arjuna could see who he's going to fight. And so when Arjuna sees that on the other side, who does he have to kill? His relatives, his teacher, his great-great forefather. So when he sees all these people who he has known all his life, that now he has to kill them, he becomes overwhelmed, confused, and he tells Krishna in many different ways why he does not want to fight this war. Keep in mind, the war is about to start right now, and Arjuna is getting cold feet. By nature, he is a warrior. Do you have a job? Do you have something that you do? Are you an artist or a musician? Or what are you? Both. Yes. So you're a musician, right? So supposing you get hired to perform on a big stage and your name is announced. Your name is what? Chris. So they announce your name, and now performing live is Chris. And all of a sudden, you don't want to go on stage. You understand? The time has come, but you're now getting scared. So Arjuna is scared, and he's offering Krishna so many arguments. And in the very last scene of chapter 1, Arjuna tells Krishna, I'm not going to fight. And he drops his bow, his weapon. So that's where this chapter begins. Okay? Now let's look at the translations. We're just going to read the translations for these first 10 verses. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan Krishna spoke the following words. So this word Madhusudan means that Krishna, in a previous, you could say, incarnation, killed a demon named Madhu. There were these two demons, Madhu and Kaitava, and they attacked Lord Brahma, the creator. So Krishna assumed a particular incarnation, Hayagriva, and he had the head of a horse. And that incarnation of Krishna killed that demon Madhu. So therefore, one of his names, Madhusudana. Can you say that? Madhusudan. So Madhusudan Krishna spoke the following words. Verse number 2. So go to the second verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy. So in chapter 1, Chris, all Krishna said in chapter 1 was, because Arjuna asked him, take my chariot in the midst of both armies. All Krishna said in chapter 1 was, okay, behold the Kurus, the other side. Now Krishna in chapter 2 begins to speak. Now he says in verse number 3, so go now to verse number 3. O son of Pritha, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. So, as you can see, Krishna does not approve of Arjuna's weakness. He wants him to fight. Sometimes people try to give an explanation of Bhagavad Gita that it's all about peace. Well, that's not what I'm reading here. He wants him to fight and kill. Yes. Text number 4. Are you on verse number 4? Good. Arjuna said, O Arisudana, killer of enemies, O Madhusudan, killer of Madhu, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? So continuing, he's arguing. He's giving reasons. And these are valid arguments, because this Bhishma is his great-great-grandfather. Supposing you had to kill your great, wouldn't be easy, would it? And this Drona is the one who taught him everything he knows about military fighting. It was his military commander, teacher. It's not so easy to do these things, right? Supposing you had a guitar teacher and you had to kill him. It wouldn't be easy, would it? Oh, you're self-taught. Me too. All right. Let's go to verse number 5. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. Verse number 6. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. So here's the perplexity. Here's the conundrum. Arjuna has given arguments now why he thinks it's not moral for him to kill the other party. But he's intelligent to know, yeah, but at the same time, they're ready to kill me. So he's in a very precarious condition. Even though he wants to forgive the other party, the other party is ready now to fight. So verse number 7 is the turning point of this Bhagavad Gita. This verse, number 7, is where Bhagavad Gita actually turns the whole thing. So this is a pivotal verse. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So this verse, there's a lot here. So he admits Arjuna has enough intelligence to admit that he's confused. And this word duty, that's very significant. Just like a policeman has a duty. If you are being attacked and you call 911, the police are supposed to come and protect you. How would you feel if when you were being attacked in your home, you're about to be killed, the policeman comes, but when he gets to your door, like Arjuna, starts to think, I don't know if I want to do this. How angry would you be? Wouldn't you? Yeah, you'd be very, you would sue City of Los Angeles. Where do you live? Yeah, you would sue. Yes, you would. So that's similar to here. Arjuna doesn't want to do his duty. He says, I'm confused. And he admits it's due to miserly weakness. He admits he knows exactly what's wrong with him. Miserly weakness. In other words, he's only thinking of himself. But here is the turning point. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me. So here is what we're talking about right here, this picture. So you see Krishna, and sitting on the chariot is Arjuna. Okay? So for over 100 years, they have been friends. They have acted as equals. They've done many things together. Arjuna even helped Krishna to get one of his wives. Krishna only married 16,108 wives, that's all. Yeah, only 16,108. And one of those, Arjuna helped him to get. One of his first 8. So, and they have done many things together. Many, many things they've done together throughout their lives. But notice what he says here. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. In other words, now we're not friends. I want you to act as my guru. Because that's what you've heard of the word guru, right? So that's what a guru does. A guru instructs and tells you what is in your best interest. Nowadays, in the world, this word guru is used very common. Sometimes people have a financial guru, and they go to their financial guru, and he tells them how to invest, what not to do. Or somebody may be an athlete and have a physical guru, a trainer, who tells them, now you have to do 100 sit-ups, now you have to do this. But here, this is the real guru. The real guru is the one who answers the most important question of your life. How do I achieve liberation? So that I don't have to come back and do this over again. Liberation. So this is the turning point. They're no longer friends now. Arjuna wants Krishna to act as his guru. As he says, tell me for certain what is best for me. That's a guru. That's a guru. The person who tells you for certain what is best. Now he continues in verse 8. I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it. Even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. In other words, the whole, like I said, this war was to determine who would rule the earth. But Arjuna is thinking, what's the point? He says, even if I win the earth, it's not going to take away the grief that I'm going to feel. Remember, in the previous verse he said, our spoils will be tainted with blood. In other words, sometimes people do things in order to gain something material. But in order to do that, they have to do murder or thievery. So yes, they got what they wanted, but at what cost? They've sold their souls, so to speak. So it's Arjuna's dilemma is still here. He's thinking, even if I do win the war, at what cost? So now we go to verse number 9. Sanjaya said, so Sanjaya is the mystic yogi who's telling the blind master what's happening. You understand? Having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, O Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. Govinda is another name for Krishna. Krishna has hundreds and millions of names. Govinda means three things. That Krishna gives pleasure to your purified senses. Govinda means Krishna's first responsibility is to take care of the cows, holy cow, mother cow. And Govinda means that Krishna gives pleasure to the transcendental land known as Vrindavan. Have you been to India yet? Well, if you stay in this movement, one day you will go to India and you will visit Vrindavan. Yes. So stay with us, okay? All right. O descendant of Bharat, Dhritarashtra, at that time, Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. So from this point on, Krishna will begin to instruct Arjuna, because he said, now I'm your surrendered servant, you please instruct me. So now we're going to go back to verse number 1, and we're going to read Prabhupada's purports. Do you know who is Prabhupada? All right, so you know who is Prabhupada. All right, but before we do that, we're going to chant something, okay? So we just do a little chanting. I don't know if you've heard this song. Jaya Radha. Have you heard this song? Well, if you keep coming, you'll hear this song every day. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. So what am I singing? Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune, Madhava. Can you say that? Madhava. Yes, Madhava. And then Radha is Krishna's favorite devotee, favorite lover. They're not married. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. And where will you find them? On the bank of the river, having loving pastimes. Gopi Janna Vallava Girivaradhari. So Gopi Janna Vallava means there are these cowherd maidens. They are Krishna's most surrendered servants. So Krishna is the lover and protector of all these gopis. And then another name, Girivaradhari. One time, when Krishna was 7 years old, how old are you? 20. Well, when Krishna was 7, he lifted a mountain and held it up with one finger for 7 days and 7 nights. So he's known as Girivaradhari. Yashodanandana Brajajanaranjana. His mother's name is Yashoda. So he's Yashoda Nandana, the son of Yashoda. Gopi Jana Ranjana, and he is the favorite of all the gopis and gopas. Yamuna Tira Vanachari, and at night he wanders along the banks of the Yamuna playing his flute. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now you sing. Hare. Louder. Good. Good. Very good, Chris. Very good. All right, so now we're going to read the purports to these 10 verses, okay? Now, if at any time you don't understand something, you stop and I'll explain, okay? Otherwise, I'll just read. But if you don't understand, here, take my bell. Yeah, when you don't understand something, ring the bell. Test it out. Okay? Otherwise, I'm just going to read. The word Madhusudan is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. What is a Kshatriya? You should ring your bell, unless you know. Well, you should have rung the bell. No. Kshatriya means a warrior. Kshatriya means a protector of the human people. Kshatriya. Sanskrit. Okay? All right. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man. And for this purpose, the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. So Bhagavad Gita, that's what we're reading, correct? Okay. Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. So you had the word Kshatriya, right? And that's a warrior, a protector. A Shudra, apart from what he says here, one who laments unnecessarily, a Shudra socially is a ordinary common laborer or worker. That's a Shudra. Okay, let's continue. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the supreme authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Anything there you don't understand? Anything you want me to explain? Then that's good. Let's go to verse number 2, purport. Okay? Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. So Gita means Bhagavad Gita, short way of saying Bhagavad Gita. You just say the Gita. Okay? Bhagavan is the ultimate in the absolute truth. Absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman, or the impersonal, all-pervasive spirit, two, Paramatma, or the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart of all living entities, and number three, Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. So far, so good. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this conception of the absolute truth is explained thus. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabyate. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the absolute truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the absolute truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun's surface, and the sun planet itself. One who studies the sunshine only is the preliminary student. One who understands the sun's surface is further advanced. And one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest. Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness, and the glaring effulgence of its impersonal nature, may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the absolute truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal features of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Anything yet? Okay, good. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists, who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the Absolute Truth, are the topmost transcendentalists, although all our students who are engaged in the study of the Absolute Truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sunshine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another. And yet, the students of the three different phases are not in the same category. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasasriya jnana vairagyoschaiva sanang bhaga itingana. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. The Supreme Person... Oh, good. Okay. Vyasadeva is a very, very important person in all of the Vedic or Hindu culture in India. Vyasadeva is the one who put into writing the four Vedas, 108 Upanishads, 18 Puranas, Mahabharata, Vedanta Sutra, Srimad Bhagavatam. These are thousands and thousands of these verses. You know, we chanted the Sanskrit at the beginning. Those are called shlokas. So Vyasadeva is called the literary incarnation of God, because all these books, like Bhagavad Gita, there are 700 shlokas. In another book, Srimad Bhagavatam, that he wrote, there are 18,000. And in this Bhagavad Gita is part of another book known as Mahabharata. How many, do you know how many shlokas there are altogether in Mahabharata? Many thousands. Then you have the four Vedas, 108 Upanishads, 17 other Puranas. So he has written thousands of these Sanskrit verses. And his father was Parashara Muni. Muni means a saintly person who, by his mental prowess, is able to come up with his own unique philosophy of life. That's a Muni. He's a great thinker. So Parashara Muni, the father. So, okay? Now you understand? Okay. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. The Supreme Personality, who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation, is called Bhagavan. So that is how we explain the word God in Vedic culture. Yes. So if somebody says, I'm God, then we have to ask them, oh, you're God? Do you have all the riches? Do you have unlimited strength? Are you famous all over, not just local, but are you famous throughout all the universe? Are you the most beautiful? Do you have unlimited knowledge? And are you also renounced? That's the criteria. If somebody's going to say, I'm God, or somebody says, you should accept this person as God, well, me, I'm going to say, really? This person is God? Well, let me see his bank account. Let me see how strong he is. Remember when I said Krishna lifted a mountain and held it up for 7 days? I don't see anybody doing that nowadays. All right. And remember I said he only married 16,108 wives. That's all. Even if he married 16 trillion, drop in the bucket. Because he's unlimited. Look, he has all of this. Let's continue. There are many persons who are very rich, very powerful, very beautiful, very famous, very learned, and very much detached. But no one can claim that he or she possesses all riches, all strength, etc., entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Godhead. You want to ring the bell? You know what that means? Godhead means, just like you have king and a kingdom, so Godhead means not just God, he has his whole kingdom, his entourage, his friends. It's not just God alone, but there's a whole thing, and you can join. Would you like to go to Godhead and be with God? Good, of course. Ring the bell, that's a good answer. Very good. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity, including Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Narayan, can possess opulences as fully as Krishna. Therefore, it is concluded in the Brahma Samhita. That's another book, Brahma Samhita. By Lord Brahma himself. Lord Brahma is the creator, the engineer of the universe. That's Lord Brahma. By Lord Brahma himself, that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Go ahead. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hmm? A very good question. And for the people who are on the internet, my student here, Chris, has asked if Brahma created the universe or did Krishna create the universe? Very good question. Krishna gives the original ingredients, and with those original ingredients, then Brahma engineers the construction of the universe. I always like to give the example. My wife, she's a very good cook. So before she can make anything, I have to give her the ingredients, the flour, the butter, the different utensils, the water, different things. Then she can make a nice meal. She can't make a meal just by saying, let there be a meal. Krishna can. Krishna doesn't need any ingredients. So what Krishna does is he gives Lord Brahma the original ingredients, and then with those ingredients, Brahma engineers the creation. Okay? Make sense? Good. Ring your bell. Good. No one is equal to or above him. He is the primeval Lord or Bhagavan, known as Govinda. Everyone say? And he is the supreme cause of all causes. Ishvara Paramaha Krishnaha Sachid Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karanam. So we're on chapter 2, verse number 2, and we're towards the end of the purport, right? Yes. Welcome, welcome, welcome. What's your name?
Olaf.
Olaf. All right. How long have you been chanting?
I started going to Yoga Shala in Sri Lanka. And then I started coming here. I mean, here's the about 30 times.
Very good. All right, welcome. How are you? All right. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagavan, but Krishna is supreme because no one can excel him. He is the supreme person, and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the primeval Lord Govinda and the cause of all causes. Do you know where we are? The next paragraph is, in the Bhagavatam also. You see that? In the Bhagavatam also. Is it the start of a new paragraph? You got it? In the Bhagavatam also, there is a list of many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Krishna is described as the original Personality of Godhead, from whom many, many incarnations and personalities of Godhead expand. Ete changsa kala pungsa Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam indriyari vyakulang lokam vridayanti yuge yuge. All the lists of the incarnations of Godhead submitted herewith are either plenary expansions. Do you know what the word plenary means? No, but that's a good guess. Anyone know what the word plenary means? Means full. That's what plenary means, full. Although plenary expansions are parts of the plenary expansions of the Supreme Godhead, but Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Therefore, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of both the Supersoul and the impersonal Brahman. In the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Arjuna's lamentation for his kinsman is certainly unbecoming. And therefore, Krishna expressed his surprise with the word kutaha, where from. Such impurities were never expected from a person belonging to the civilized class of men known as Aryans. So, Ola, if at any time you don't understand something, tell me or ring the bell and I'll explain. Everything, you understand everything? Okay, good. But if anything you don't understand, hit the bell and we'll answer. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realizations. Persons who are led by the material concept of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of the absolute truth, Vishnu, or Bhagavan. And they are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore they do not know what liberation is. Remember what I said before? That's the goal of life, liberation. Persons who have no knowledge of liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans. Although Arjuna was a Kshatriya and he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight, this act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans. Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it even give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen. Shall we go on to verse number 3? Everything, you understand everything? Okay, so we're reading the purport. We already did the Sanskrit and the translation. So we're reading the purport to text number 3. Arjuna was addressed as the son of Pritha, who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Therefore, Arjuna had a blood relationship with Krishna. If the son of a Kshatriya declines to fight, he is a Kshatriya in name only. And if the son of a Brahmin acts impiously, he is a Brahmana in name only. Such Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are unworthy sons of their fathers. Therefore, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was directly guiding him on the chariot. But in spite of all these credits, if Arjuna abandoned the battle, he would be committing an infamous act. Therefore, Krishna said that such an attitude in Arjuna did not fit his personality. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives. But Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. Such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. Therefore, such magnanimity or so-called nonviolence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna. Everything understood? Everybody? So let's go to verse number 4. Verse number 4, the purport. Respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather, and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable, even if they attack, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counterattack them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather, Ugrasena, or his teacher, Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. Shall we go to text number 5? All right. Purport to verse number 5. According to scriptural codes, a teacher who engages in an abominable action and has lost sense of discrimination is fit to be abandoned. Bhishma and Drona were obliged to take the side of Duryodhan because of his financial assistance. Although they should not have accepted such a position simply on financial considerations. Under the circumstances, they have lost the respectability of teachers. But Arjuna thinks that nevertheless, they remain his superiors. And therefore, to enjoy material profits after killing them would mean to enjoy spoils tainted with blood. Shall we go to verse number 6 purport? Okay. Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of the Kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence. Nor was there certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them, and their cause was justified, still if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. All these considerations by Arjuna definitely proved that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened and had complete control over his mind and senses. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was truly virtuous, and these qualities, combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge. And without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. Arjuna was competent in all these attributes, over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships. Any questions so far? All right, we'll go to verse number 7, the purport. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step, there is perplexity. And therefore, it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. No one wants fire, and yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in the disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. One should not, therefore, remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of this verse. So we'll stop here. And I do this class every Wednesday.